Hi, this is Chris.
And Sarah.
We're just getting ready for a time of boredom.
Excitement.
And consternation.
Welcome to the unofficial Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Woo!
Yay!
Hey guys, you're listening to the July 14th, 2007 edition of the unofficial Adventures in Odyssey podcast. Yes, we're finally back after our three-week break. Today, we're pleased to bring to you the first part of our interview with writers Nathan Hubler and Marshall Younger. Enjoy!
Well, joining us today is Nathan Hubler. Hey Nathan.
Hello.
And we have Marshall Younger as well.
Hi.
How are you both doing today?
Very busy. We've got a recording session coming up on Monday.
Yes, but we're nearly done with everything, so I'm feeling much more relieved today than I was a few days earlier.
Yeah, the 2 weeks before recording sessions, everything falls apart. It's kind of a tradition. It really does. Everything falls apart. Mm-hmm. We lose actors, we lose studios, we lose all sorts of stuff. Yeah, but it's come together, so I think we're okay now.
It seemed to fall apart a couple of times on this session, but as of right now, everything seems to be back together.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Hi, everyone!
Oh, there. Sarah's here.
Hey,
Sarah.
I am alive and very, very excited to be here.
Well, we are too. This is our first interview using this method of technology here.
Isn't it fun?
It is fun.
And I'm sure the audience is having a really good time too.
I'm sure they are. We have a lot of questions from them, so let's get to those actually. Our first one comes from Connie's number one fan. She would like to know, when did you both start working with Adventures in Odyssey, and how did that come about?
All right, I'll start, because our stories are very different. I had never heard of Adventures in Odyssey. I don't know that I'd ever heard a radio drama in my life. But I was at school at Regent University in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and I wrote a radio drama for a class that I was taking. And after it was produced, the producer of the show sent it to Paul McCusker, who was then executive producer, and he was actually trying to get a job for himself. So then Paul McCusker had the unenviable task of having to call this guy and say, "Well, we're not really interested in the production, but who wrote the script?" And so they contacted me, and I they asked me to write a couple freelance scripts, and I did, and then I came on staff a year later in 1993. Hmm.
And, well, my story, some people might be familiar with at least part of my story from the website, but my story is very different in that I grew up as a fan of Odyssey. I was a fan since I was 8 years old, and I started a website about the show when I was at college. It's still there, Adventures in Odyssey headquarters. And shortly after I created the website, some of the producers of the show, Marshall and Paul and Dave, some of the people started contacting me by email just to say, "Hey, nice website, just wanted to say hello," which, you know, is like George Lucas contacting a Star Wars fan. It was just incredibly cool for me. And I started using AOL Instant Messenger with Mark Drury, who was one of the sound designers, and he and I just talked about a lot of different things, movies and life and college and all these things. He said, "Why don't you come out here for an internship sometime?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be a great idea." So I came out summer of 2000 as an intern for Odyssey. And then while I was here, I wrote my first script, which was The Triangle.
That is every Odyssey fan's dream. Would you like to come to an internship? Oh, no, I think I'll pass. Of course I would!
Well, several of our different webmasters and Odyssey fans have come for internships. So Shadow Paw was here, the guy who runs the soda fountain was here for an internship, and a couple other people who have been on the message boards have been here for internships.
Sarah, here's your chance. Here's your chance.
Hi.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, Sarah's been dying to join the Odyssey team through an internship or even acting, maybe.
Oh,
but,
gosh, Chris, stop. It's a really good thing we're not doing a silver webcam. It's a really, really good thing.
We'd be seeing a very red face, is that what you're saying?
I don't even blush, and yes, you would be. Oh my goodness. Okay, so moving on. I'll kill Chris later. Marshall, do you think your style of writing episodes has changed since you first started? And that's from H-Tide.
It really has. I try to be more subtle now, especially with messages. You know, Whit used to come out and just really say what he was feeling, and he still does that to some extent, but I like to be a little more subtle with that. I tend to write quicker dialogue, quicker scenes. I just like the feel of just real quick scenes and people going back and forth. I think I also have learned not to try so hard to make a character sound like a character, because the actors do so much of that in the studio. I don't have to make Connie so much like Connie, because Katie will make it Connie. That's just something that I've learned, and I don't know that that's a different writing technique, but it's just something I've learned because, you know, we work with such talented people with Odyssey.
It's interesting how you mentioned your writing style has changed. You're a bit more to the point. And it reminds me of a recent podcast in which you actually mentioned something about Nathan being a long-winded writer.
Yes. Well, I wasn't always that way. I think it's been the influence of Paul McCusker, since his scripts are always very long.
Excuses.
Well, Paul McCusker started writing radio theater, and there's no limit to what you can you can just write and write and write and write. So, and then he came back with Odyssey, and suddenly everything's so long.
I don't know that I usually have a tendency to write long scripts, though. I don't think that's been a pattern. Maybe it has been lately, no. But not in general.
And we're not talking 12 minutes long. We're talking maybe a 2-3 minutes long. Yeah.
Right. Although it was. The two-parter did turn into a three-parter, so it was like 20 minutes
long. Oh, that's true. Yeah. I forgot about that one.
It's all relative to the context of the episode anyways.
Right.
So,
I wanted to jump back to the triangle really quick.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
And just say that because somebody distracted us, that that was a pretty awesome effort for a first episode right there, Nathan. That's probably one of my favorites. So.
Well, thank you. The original inspiration for that show, well, as you know, was from the episode For Whom the Wedding Bells Toll, and Paul McCusker was the one who suggested taking that line that Jack says about Whit stealing his girlfriend away. Paul was the one who suggested turning that into an episode.
Alrighty.
Did you want me to make other comments on the awesomeness of the episode, or?
I think it's good. I just wanted to say something on it before we jumped ahead. So. Yeah.
One of the questions I had for you, Nathan, was when did you first begin listening to Adventures in Odyssey?
See, I don't even remember the first show that I heard, because Odyssey's been such a part of my life for so long, I can't really remember the time before Odyssey. I mean, there was obviously a time in my life before I started listening, but I can't really remember that. So I don't remember what my first show was. It was sometime in the first year. I remember hearing Case of the Secret Room on the radio for the first time, so it was sometime before that, but sometime in 1988 is when I started.
1988, a very special year, very, very near and dear to my heart and my parents. Did you ever aspire to be a writer when you were younger? You mentioned designing and running your website, the AIO HQ, but prior to that, did you have any experience in writing or doing scripts at all?
Not really in doing scripts, at least not for anything professionally. I wrote some on my own, which were pretty terrible. But from a very early age, I always enjoyed writing. I never thought that at least writing for Odyssey was something that you could actually do for a job. It didn't even really click for me that that was something that you could actually make money for, or that people actually did for a career. But I've always been interested in writing.
Kind of. Well, I wanted to comment. Like, I hear you on the. You actually get paid for doing this? One of those kind of, I listened since I was like 4 or 5, so growing up on this, it's one of those, I would do it for free, take me!
Well, I would do it for free too, but you eventually have to get some kind of job that makes money, so.
I don't mind getting paid for it either.
Nathan, how has you being an original fan of the show before you were on staff influenced how you write the episodes?
I think it's just influenced what my perspective is on the shows, is that I typically, for better or for worse, don't necessarily write from a kid's point of view as much as a fan of the show's point of view. And I think that because all of us on the team come from different perspectives, Marshall came from his background, Paul, Dave, all of us come from different backgrounds, that it really provides a lot of balance for the team. And so I
my first thought is always from a fan perspective, someone who's listened to the show for a long time and knows a lot of the episodes, and people who, you know, you guys on the website notice that I often put in little references to previous episodes in my shows, and that's definitely influenced by just growing up as a fan of the show.
I never get sometimes tired of those.
Sometimes I have to go back and kind of look at the script and take those out because they don't really work, or Marshall or Paul or Dave will make a comment that, you know, this doesn't really, maybe a fan out there would get this, but no one else would, so it probably needs to be taken out. So that's the great thing about, I'm going to say the same thing again, sorry. Let me end that a different way. So I don't want to give too much editing to you here, Chris, but...
Don't worry about it, I'm used to it.
But that's the great thing about having the team that we do.
I think that was a swipe at you, Sarah, that he had to do a lot of editing.
Oh, no.
I know. I just wasn't going to say anything. I was actually going to comment on, can you tell these guys work in radio?
Well,
I'm used to the insults.
When we work on the official podcast, I usually, like, if I don't like an answer I've given, I'll go back and edit it, because since I often edit them, I can change what I say.
He does that, too. And then he does it to make me look like an idiot or something. And he's only done it, like, twice because that's all I'll let him get away with, but... I'll be, like, listening to something, and I'm like, hey, I don't remember this part. He's like, oh, I had it done in later. And I was like, oh, okay.
It's called clarification, Sarah, so the fans know exactly what I'm saying.
Uh-huh. That's what you like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing.
Oh, sure.
I was going to tell you guys, feel free to insult me whenever you want to. I don't care. Everyone else does. You may as well join the club.
Oh, we won't insult you. We won't do that. We don't insult people here, except each other.
Not okay. Too much, anyways. Moving on, one of the most common types of questions we received was in regards to different characters, especially those we haven't heard from in a while, those such as Alex and Cal, the Barclays, Monica Stone was a popular name, Arthur Dent, Philip Glossman. What can you share about those characters?
Well, I'll give you some inside information here. We are currently working on an album, our 50th album, which has a little bit of that in it. It's sort of a reunion album of sorts. And so you may be seeing some of these characters that you guys have wanted to come back.
Grocer Jenkins?
The fans out there are going to be pleased? We have a two-part Grocer Jenkins show. Not really. Yeah, an Officer Burke show.
Yay!
That's a three-parter. Officer Burke and his
people are
his
going
family,
to the fan
background.
Club now.
No, we just have a lot of the old characters are going to be present in that particular album. So keep listening. It's going to air in the spring of 2008, but the album is going to be number 50.
Why do we have Rodney Rathbone on this list? Is he gone and I just didn't notice?
Oh, he's been around. He's going to be around this fall too.
Yeah, actually, yeah, he's going to be in October or something. Yeah.
I know, I just wondered why he was in the list of characters that went bye-bye, because he definitely has it, unless I've definitely missed something in the last 2 months.
Wait,
so
you know how the fans think. I mean, if they're gone for 2 episodes, 3 episodes, we think they're gone. I mean,
have they gone into the dark tunnel and are never coming back again?
I think someone's in love with Rodney Rathbone.
There are definitely several characters on this list of characters who are going to be returning in Album 50.
Awesome. Okay, let's see. Next question. This one comes from Candy Jakes. Little reference
Candy
to
Jakes.
Little reference that Marshall might be familiar with.
In my heart, Candy Jakes.
She asked, "Was Connie's book really erased?" And this was in reference to the Chosen One.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
But
yes.
That is not the end of the Connie book storyline. There's more to come with that, but her book was definitely still erased.
Yes.
What about recovery programs? Come on, people.
No, Kelly was very, very...
She's very technologically...
Yeah, she knows what she's doing. She got rid of all that stuff. I mean, she just blew that thing away.
Yeah, in the whole 20 seconds she had to do it. Uh-huh.
Well, you know, she knows a lot about computers. Connie has a Mac, too, so it's a lot easier to erase files.
That's true.
At the end of the episode Exit, the chairman of Novacom said it's over for now. So, do you have any plans in making any more episodes with Novacom?
Not currently. We have no plans. We we wanted a little bit of time to get away from that kind of show, the intrigue, the mystery, the where we had a huge story arc with that. We might go back to that at some point, but we wanted to take a few albums off. We have no plans for the chairman at this point, but who knows?
Will we ever find out who he is? That's for me. I finally came up with my own question.
That's definitely up for grabs in the future, but don't be expecting it in the next year or so.
Okay. D. Sheets wants to know, are you working on any more Bible shows?
We don't have a show this fall that's going to be a dedicated Bible story, just the whole thing is a Bible story, but we do have a BTV coming up this fall, BTV Temptation, and that'll have several Bible stories in it, including the story of Solomon. So that's one thing you can look forward to.
Written by our own Nathan Hubler?
Yes.
Will there be more Tales of History from the Imagination Station?
There is a show about Christian history called Something Significant, which is going to air in November, something like that.
I'm looking at the schedule now. maybe the end of October.
End of October, October 27th, something around in there. Which is, what can I give them on this?
We'll see several different stories from Christian history,
yeah,
from several different eras, including something that might be more significant than you think. How's that for vague there?
Wow.
Actually, we could say that for every episode.
So I think so, yeah.
Significant in it.
Okay, here's one that I came up with, actually. What has it been like writing about what is that?
That's an interesting question.
Right? But the answer is,
Chris, I'm sorry, Chris.
Let me rephrase that question. what has it been like writing about more serious and current issues, such as abuse, adoption, which we've heard from in The Chosen One again, and more in particular, the divorce, which we've heard a lot of in the Mandy saga?
Well, the adoption story obviously is very close to my heart because we just did foster care for a couple of years, and then we ended up adopting a son through that. And it really has painted my writing a lot, just going through this experience. And I think it's important, and right now Focus is trying to really push Christians taking in orphans and going into foster care, and I just think that's so important that Christians, you know, get involved in that. And then what was the other thing you said? Oh, it was
the Mandy story.
The Mandy story, right? And divorce too. I mean, we just get so many letters from kids from broken homes, and we've actually had some people on our team who've gone through broken homes. And I'm sure that their writing has, you know, painted a picture of that too.
It's always a question on shows like that: is will the benefit be worth the risk that you take? Because when you do a series of shows about divorce or abuse or any topic like that, it's always pretty risky because you don't want to scare people, and you don't want it to seem like there's no redemption. And we had resisted doing a show about divorce for a long time.
Yes.
And we decided that it was worth doing at this point if we could make each show have a positive, solid message at the end of it.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, it's always difficult touching upon those sensitive issues. And you certainly face that with Primal Has a Problem, for instance. And that eventually led to the episode being dropped from the album entirely.
We were told to do that show. And I think we had resisted it for a long time. Did the show and then decided that we didn't necessarily want to be the people talking to kids about abortion, that we should leave that to the parents.
We didn't want to be the place that kids would hear about abortion,
yes,
for the first time. Whereas with something like divorce, that's obviously, kids have heard about that. But
experiencing it.
And maybe experiencing it. Whereas with Pamela Has a Problem, they might not have actually even heard about the topic of abortion. And we wanted parents to be the first ones to talk to the kids about that.
Right. Slightly different issue there. But, I mean, definitely with the topic of divorce, that was briefly touched upon in the Barkley episode, I believe, where Donna and Jimmy believe their parents are getting divorced. And the message in that episode was less about divorce and how to deal with it. Rather, the emphasis was more on the importance of the marriage vow. I think it was really neat how you guys went back to this issue of divorce through Mandy's character and approached it from a way that was both realistic in its harsh nature, but also one that was sensitive to the listener and God-centered, ultimately. So that was cool.
Well, we've gotten some concerned parents about this particular story arc with Mandy, but we thought it was worth, you know, getting some criticism about it.
Absolutely. I mean, in the church right now, the divorce rate's higher in the church than it is outside the church, so there's a lot of our kids are going to be going through this. And I know for me, hearing stuff that's relevant to my life, especially for, like, coming from Odyssey, which, yes, it does happen on a very regular occurrence, which is kind of scary. It's really good because it reminds me that I'm not alone in what I'm going through.
Yeah. That's good.
All right. H-Tide asks, overall, what did you think of this past spring season? I think it was the first and only time you aired 11 episodes in a single season rather than the usual 12.
Yeah, we just got lazy. We just couldn't come up with a 12th show. We said, I don't really feel like doing a 12th show.
Well, there was, I don't know if this is that interesting, but the show that's going to air this fall as the season opener was originally the season closer of this season, and through a long kind of series of events, we decided to delay that show, and because we delayed that show, it affected the schedule, some of the other shows that were going to air, and so we ended up... it was really only 11 shows that fit with the storylines that we had, and so we decided we have this one show left over, BTV Redeeming the Season, that's never been in an album, so we decided to put that in. So hopefully it's seen as a bonus and not just us being lazy.
Even though that's really what it was.
But if you're asking us what we thought about the season, then I loved it.
It had a lot of your shows in it.
Little bit of bias there.
No, but I thought it was a good season.
Did you guys have Dixie Cups, by the way?
Well, we haven't had the Dixie Cups yet.
Oh,
Corey,
okay.
Corey and I are being lazy on that.
Because I have my vote on the spring season.
So we're looking at the spring schedule here.
Anyway, okay.
Oh, well, Candy Jakes wants to know if Connie will ever go anywhere in life.
Well, it's tough to go very far with her, because otherwise then Connie's not Connie anymore. You know, what are you going to do? Are you going to get her married and have a career and stuff? I mean, that'd be boring. Or is she not going to work at Wits End anymore? What's up with that? Connie's got to be Connie.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you guys should do something about her, like, you know, where Paul talks about some God to just some people to be single. Just use that as an answer anytime someone asks if Connie's going to get married.
No, I like her just being not being able to find a boyfriend. That makes her more pathetic. I like that.
Okay, then.
Okay. H-Tide, the question. She asks, what inspired the whole Leonard Meltzer story arc?
Well, we had, when Eugene came back in album 44... we didn't have a lot for him to do, aside from what happened in Eugene Returns, which was he came back and we had the wedding show. And so once he came back, we wanted to come up with a storyline for him, or several storylines that would last a while. And one of the things that we had talked about years ago was introducing a storyline with Eugene's father. And so right around the time that we were bringing Eugene back, we started working on a storyline that would involve him searching for his father. So that it just kind of coming up with story ideas or a story arc for Eugene is where that show came from.
Well, it was just like the triangle with that one line about he stole my girlfriend. Well, we got this thing hanging in the show Last Long Line about
what happened to Eugene's father.
Right. So
interesting. You know, after the second part of The Top Floor, in which we discover that Everett is Leonard's son and Eugene's brother, there were mixed feelings amongst the fans over whether or not you guys should have written Everett into the script in the first place. I know there were at least a handful of fans who were somewhat disgruntled over the quote-unquote resurrection of both Leonard and Everett. So talk a bit about why you decided to introduce Everett into the picture. And as a follow-up to that question, did you know you were going to bring him in from the beginning of the Leonard Meltzner mini-arc, or did that idea come in later?
We had talked about Everett from fairly early on. We had actually planned that, I think from, if not the beginning, very early on, when Eugene sees Everett's tombstone in the cemetery. At long before that point, we had planned to bring Everett into the story. So it was not a last minute addition to the script, but it was something that we thought would add another dimension to not only Leonard's character having this son who was taken from him, but also to Dalton's character, that he wasn't just this he was an evil person, he was a bad guy, but he also had this human side to him, kind of a twisted human side to him.
Almost a good father. Yeah,
yeah, that he actually did love Everett, and so it added more dimension to the villain character. We've had so many shows on Odyssey, we're always trying to come up with something different. You know, if you introduce a villain, there has to be something interesting about him, and so having the Everett angle to Dalton gave him a different dimension.
I'm just glad he wasn't a last-minute add-on. That you didn't create him just so you could have a Star Wars moment. You know, one of those "I'm your father" moments.
We resisted doing that line. Doing that exact line. I mean, we could have had Everett say, "No!"
Oh, you got pretty close, though, so I'm sure some people caught on to that. But anyways. And that's it for now. Stay tuned next week to hear the second part of our interview with Nathan Hubler and Marshall Younger. Then, on July 28th, you can hear the third and final installment of the interview. As always, your questions and comments are welcomed. You can email them to us at aiofanpodcast@hotmail.com, or you can private message them to myself or Sarah on the Town of Odyssey. Our usernames are Trent DeWight and JesusFreak777. Hope you enjoy listening, and I'll talk to you next week.